Hey. I almost said welcome back. That would be appropriate. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to Friday. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks to Brad Friedman for filling in for me last night. I think he made it sound like I was on my deathbed. No, just a lot of pollen, a lot of junk, a lot of bronchitis, and a lot of asthmatic bronchitis. That's what you get for smoking for 40 years. If you smoke, stop. I have been stopped for 10 years, and but I'll tell you what, everything that they didn't tell us about smoking when I got hooked on this filthy thing turned out to be true. So that's what that was all about. Enough of my medical history. Thanks for hanging out tonight. This hour is being sponsored by Raging Lefty. Raging Lefty. And he's got a little holiday message here. You ready? To set the record straight about Patrick of Ireland, you know, St. Pat, who was not, all caps, a Roman Catholic, nor believed in papal authority. Patrick of Ireland was a missionary of the Celtic Orthodox Christian Church. The Vatican distorted Patrick's history and forced Roman Catholicism on Ireland centuries after his death. Learn more from The Legacy of the True Historical Patrick by Richard Bennett, a former Irish Catholic priest at the-history.com. Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Raging Lefty. I didn't know St. Patrick was not a Roman Catholic. I'll be darned. The things you learn. The things you learn from doing talk radio. This is Friday. We'll be giving away a podcast subscription later on, probably the bottom of next hour. Also, at the top of the next hour, we'll be talking with a woman named Sudan Saladoff or Saladoff. I'm not sure. We'll have the pronunciation right by the time she's a guest. She made the Sundance Acceptance Award-winning film Hot Coffee on how corporations use so-called tort reform and all sorts of dirty tricks to limit access to the courts for civil cases. So we'll be talking to her coming up about an hour, I guess, right? Raging Lefty, Patrick of Ireland was not a Catholic. A missionary, the Celtic Orthodox Christian. Well, okay. The things, like I said, the things you learn. It's just incredible. Got an email from Dr. Sachs. You know who I'm talking about. Dr. Sachs, man. He plays that instrument with the Count Basie band. He sends me emails from all over the world. I don't know where this one came from. Here's what he writes tonight. Yo, I don't have much to say around about here, but you ever notice how much stupid blank you hear on the cable news? And then what's up with people showing clips of Game Change, HBO movie on Sarah Palin, as if it's a documentary and 100% factual? WTF? It's a movie! Even if it's based on a book which is claimed to be verified, you still can't show clips as if it's Sarah Palin to prove your political point of view. It's a movie, people! That's like me showing clips of Jurassic Park in a biology class to verify the living habits of dinosaurs. God help us all! Oh yeah, predatory capitalism, I love that term. That sums it up. Signed, Dr. Saxman. yeah, you know, Sarah, right. So it mentions people like Steve Schmidt, the political operative who ran or organized the McCain-Palin campaign. I don't know which. I really don't give a damn. I don't get, like Dr. Saxman here, I don't get any of this. Movie about Sarah Palin? Who gives a rat's ass? I know she does.
Oh, it's not true. Golly, Miss Moore looks just like, what's her name, Julianne Moore? She looks just like me. Of course, I'm prettier.
Crazy times. Thanks, Dr. Saxman. From Roz up in Canada, she writes, Mike, why do you think it is that Apple gets all of its advertising free on, of all things, the news? That's a good question. It isn't done for any other electronic gadget company. For some reason, that really irritates me and smacks of favoritism. Another giant irritant is the spate of racist things happening south of the border, on your side of it. The poor 17-year-old black kid who was shot for walking too slow. And then the Puerto Rican basketball player who had hate remarks yelled in unison at him. There must be a run on white sheets since the Republicans raised their ugly heads. Actually, there has been, Ross. This always happens when they do. It's almost like giving the racist, misogynistic loonies a red light to come out of the shadows. You mean a green light? On a lighter note, happy St. Paddy's Day for tomorrow. And since my maternal side of the family were O'Callaghans and Sullivans, I guess I will raise a glass to them, too. Rosalind. Thank you, Roz. As you know, the pig man is losing scores upon scores upon scores of advertisers. What is it, up to 150 now? But as he said the other day, it doesn't matter. He has 15,000 advertisers. But anyway, I don't know what that means. I have no idea what that means. Anyway, at Crooks and Liars, I saw this today. It says there's something so deliciously ironic, so perfect, so perfectly just in this. The Southern Poverty Law Center reports that Rush Limbaugh has a new sponsor anxious to buy up lots of ad space on his show, Westboro Baptist Church. Is there anything more delicious than the idea of the haters advertising on the haters show? Premier Networks has released a statement saying they will not accept any ads from the group. Who knew they had standards of what Limbaugh maligns as, quote, political correctness, end quote. Now, this is from the Southern Poverty Law Center, quote, as a matter of fact, I can confirm that, Westboro spokesman Steve Brain told Hate Watch today when asked if the church was seeking to advertise on the Rush Limbaugh show. He said, we're preparing our first ad at this very moment, and we'll have a 30-second radio spot ready to go by Friday, end quote. Drain said he has been in contact with ad executives, but added that the Westboro spots will have to be produced before they are accepted or rejected. The radio ads would be posted as audio links Friday on the church's websites, the Westboro spokesman said. For its part, Westboro says it sees a natural affinity with Limbaugh, according to Drain, but the first ad won't mention those commonalities. The Westboro spokesman said, quote, the ad's message will be that America is doomed because Americans have cast aside the standards of God and won't quit their proud sinning, end quote. Westboro also agrees with Limbaugh's remarks about Miss Fluke, Drain said, and will attempt to impart that message in the church's second radio advertisement. Drain said in comments that closely resembled those delivered earlier by Limbaugh, quote, that lady basically believes she wants the government to pay to kill her babies. That implies a certain level of promiscuity. She wants to fornicate her brains out, but she doesn't want a child. Sounds like a slut to me, and God hates sluts, end quote. Really? God hates sluts? CNL asks. Crooks and Liars, funny, I always understood that God doesn't hate anyone. I can only assume that Drain, the Westville spokesman, might need a little church chat to remind him of who is possessing him right now. Who could it be? Who could it be? Westboro Baptist. Well, that makes sense. I don't know why. All sorts of hate organizations haven't, they probably have made an effort to advertise on the Pigman Show. It's a natural progression. Rush Limbaugh, hate organizations, violence.
Come along the Liffey side, cut across the Haypenny. Meet me there, we'll pass the key, go down to Temple Bar. I've been waiting for so long, show you where the watercolors paint face of Dublin town, down in places. People come from near and far, join a crowd of many-colored faces down in Temple Bar. When the evening sun goes down, gives its place up to a star. Find a pub and drink around down in Temple Bar.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Ballora.
21 past the hour. From a liberal in South Carolina, this is from the state newspaper there. Liberal in SC sent this to me this morning. It says, burning crosses found in Swansea. That's a town, small town in South Carolina. Lexington County deputies are investigating a cross burning this morning in Swansea. Officers responded to it. All right, now wait, before I finish this. In the way it's reported, just listen how it's reported. But the thing that is really weird is at the end of this little story, the last sentence, I want you to listen. This is in the newspaper there. And the state is the big newspaper in South Carolina, okay? Officers responded to a home in the 100 block of Gray Fox Forest Lane about 3 a.m. and found a 3-foot wooden cross burning in the front yard. Lexington County Sheriff's Department spokesman Eric Murrah said, a man getting up for work saw the cross and called the police, according to incident reports. The man reportedly told deputies that he saw a large pickup truck speed by and taillights from a second car as he got closer to the home. The cross is made out of wood used in pallets used to transport goods, Murrah said. He said the wood was set on fire by gas from aerosol cans. Several beer cans were recovered at the scene, too, he said, which will be tested for fingerprints. Two women were home at the time of the incident. Both women are described as black in the incident report. Here it comes. Murrah said that it is unclear whether or not the incident is racially motivated or if the home was targeted. It's unclear if it was racially motivated. It's a burning cross! What do you think that was, a prayer meeting? Oh my God! And the state newspaper is a pretty good newspaper. Whoever wrote that? Murrah, that's the spokesman for the Lexington County Sheriff's Department, said it is unclear whether or not the incident is racially motivated or if the home was targeted. I sometimes throw my hands up in the air and say I give up. This is one of those stories. A cross burning in front of a house in which lived two black women in a little town in South Carolina. Beer cans scattered around the cross, a pickup truck speeding away from the crime scene, and whoever wrote this piece said it's not clear, or it was that, no, I'm sorry, it's not the writer of the piece, it's the sheriff's spokesman. The sheriff department spokesman said, well, it's not clear if it was racially motivated. You know, we can't jump to any conclusions here. But we'll let you know. I hope Dr. Saxman is listening to mine. Oh, my God. Not clear if it was racially motivated. Ow! They're out of their minds. Santorum and his lies. We'll get to that. Oh, yeah. Okay. I got time to squeeze this from Maggie in Mount Shasta, California. She says, Rick Santorum gave a speech in Arizona the other day saying that the defense budget was 60%, but now is 17%. I guess that means of the overall budget. And that entitlements, even though taxpayers actually pay for them, are the real deficit problem. Isn't that 17% figure an outright lie? Santorum insinuates that Obama cut the defense budget down to nothing. But doesn't Congress actually have the power, not the president? And this Congress surely would do no such thing. Did I bust Santorum on an outright lie, or is this figure correct? It's astounding how much BS is being spewed by the GOP three-ring circus, Maggie and Mount Shasta. Well, I went to a couple of websites to find out the budget breakdown for 2012. This is where it gets a little tricky. The total budget for 2012 was $3.7 trillion. Now they have a category called defense related expenditure. Then they have Department of Defense spending $707 billion. But then they have FBI counterterrorism, international affairs, energy department, defense related, veterans affairs, homeland security, NASA satellites, veterans pensions, other defense related mandatory spending, interest on debt incurred in past wars. Total spending for Department of Defense, $1.4 trillion. Now, when you stack that up against a total budget of $3.7 trillion, well, my goodness, that figures up to, what, 35%? I don't know, Maggie. I don't think you caught Rick Santorum in a lie. I think you caught him in the fact that he's a lying, stinking Republican. That's you know, that's the only thing I can figure. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour. And I love that music. This hour is being sponsored by Raging Lefty. Thanks, Raging. Here's his message. To set the record straight about Patrick of Ireland, who was not a Roman Catholic nor believed in papal authority. Patrick of Ireland was a missionary of the Celtic Orthodox Christian Church. The Vatican distorted Patrick's history. Oh, there's something new and different. And forced Roman Catholicism on Ireland. Yeah, that too. Centuries after his death. Learn more from The Legacy of the True Historical Patrick by Richard Bennett. You can find it at the-history.com/Patrick_Bennett.html. You'll find it. Just go to thehistory.com. The-history.com. It's time for Prairie 2. Subject line, they don't do God's work and it doesn't belong to them. This week's report on initial unemployment claims showed a sharp drop, erasing last week's increase. And this restored the downward trend we've had since early in the year. There was a 0.1% increase in hourly wages last month, but this was more than wiped out by the 0.4% increase in the consumer price index, the CPI, mostly from gasoline, as non-fuel and food prices were only up 0.1% for the month. It appears that stockpiles of fuel components to make summer blend gasoline are at record levels, suggesting that the gasoline price bubble is about to burst. The corporate media was reporting yesterday that the Obama administration and the Brits had agreed to release oil from strategic reserves, but this has since been denied, and the price of oil has recovered to previous highs. The wild swings in gasoline and oil make a lot of money for the Wall Street bankers as they buy and sell futures contracts, making money going up and coming down. They also sell derivatives based on what the future price will be to the suckers who play in their casinos. You might wonder who fed ABC the rumor that the price was about to collapse. You can bet that whoever that was, they made a killing by timing the market, or more accurately, by making the market. Mayor Bloomberg defended the head of Goldman Sachs, saying, quote, He's trying to lead this firm at a time when God couldn't lead it without being criticized, end quote. He's referring, of course, to Lloyd Blankfein. Bloomberg, a billionaire himself, started as an investment banker. Goldman CEO Lloyd Blankfein was at one time quoted as saying the bank was, quote, doing God's work, end quote. The only record of God getting involved with people like this was to smash their tables and chase them from the temple. Aye. The Republican base constantly frets over taxes and the size of government. They do this even as our government represents 21% of GDP compared to 50% in most developed countries. Countries that, when taken in total, altogether don't spend what we do by ourselves on the military. Of course. It's what Eisenhower warned us about, right? Republicans also have no problem with financial services consuming a quarter of the GDP. The so-called economic royalists, as FDR called them, take a huge cut off the top of everything in the United States and provide nothing for it. They don't provide the expert business decisions making decision making for the country that we've been promised for the past 30 years. They've run the country into the ground. The whole place looks like any privatized prison after a couple of decades on the lease. It's ready to be torn down. When you go to the gas pump, the cut taken by the Wall Street bankers and oil company CEOs far outstrips the gas tax the Republicans refuse to raise. No matter how many bridges are closed or simply collapsed during rush hour, more and more government is being privatized. A large cash payment allows red state governors to balance their budgets for 1 year and cut taxes for the rich cronies. We get to pay double, triple, or more for something we used to own. And now we pay rent forever. When you go to the doctor, the insurance company makes more money than your doctor. And they didn't go to medical school. So-called Obamacare did put a throttle on that. Now only 15% goes to the insurance company instead of 40%. Despite what the right says, premiums are starting to come down. Insurance companies who don't cut rates will start sending out big rebate checks around Election Day. It's not single-payer health care like the rest of the developed world has. Medicare does it for less than 3% overhead instead of 15%. The next most expensive system in the world does it for half what we've been spending per person, and every country has a better health statistic than we do. But it's a start. We can have our country back. But first, most people need to learn that it used to belong to us. PrairieNumeral2.com. What else is happening? Oh, you know, Santorum was in Puerto Rico and hoping that he would pick up some of the Vet Commonwealth's delegates to add to his column in his death duel with Mitt Romney. Every vote counts, he told reporters yesterday. That sounds faintly racist to me, but I'll just leave that alone. But he managed, according to the New York Times, the unusual feat of alienating one delegate after he created a firestorm by asserting that if Puerto Rico opted to become a state, it would have to make English its primary language. Jesus Christ. He told the newspaper El Vocero, quote, like any other state, there has to be compliance with this and any other federal law, end quote. Of course, there is no federal law about language. Oh, my God. There is no rule. It's in the Constitution requiring the adoption of English for the admittance of new states, and the United States does not have an official language. It doesn't matter to these dumb half-wits. It really doesn't. On Thursday, Santorum and his aide scrambled to contain the damage, with the candidate saying several times that the local media had misquoted him as saying he wanted English to be the only language, whereas he believed that English should be the primary language. No, they weren't misquoting you, Rick. I don't know if this was your first trip there, but probably 99% of the residents of Puerto Rico speak Spanish. And you're going to tell them that English has to become their primary language. Do you know what the word primary comes from? The Latin. It means first. Oh, Jesus. Anyway, Santorum found himself in damage control mode as he was wrapping up a two-day visit to the Commonwealth, blah, 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 blah. What's his name? Overman had a picture of Santorum lying in a bathing suit on a lounge chair in some little resort hotel there. And apparently the picture was taken by a passing cruise ship that was exclusively for gay men. And they took a picture of Santorum laying there in these hideous boxer kind of bathing suit. We were in Puerto Rico with the comedian. Hal Sparks. Yeah, we were. It's a long story, but let me just put it this way. We were there, and Kathy and Molly and I went one way, and Hal Sparks and the guy we were traveling with, this was a business-related deal. It was a cruise for talk show hosts and blah, 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 and a few other people. Progressive Voices cruise, right. But we had a day off, and we didn't have to, hold seminars or whatever. So Hal Sparks and Kathy and Molly and I and another guy who had organized the cruise disembarked and walked into the outskirts of, not the outskirts, but San Juan, not Old San Juan. Old San Juan is downtown. That's where the forts and the castles are and so on and so forth. So we decided we were going to go our separate ways because they wanted to see something and we wanted to see something else. So we split up. And when we got back together 5 or 6 hours later, Hal told us that in the berth right next to ours, we saw it when we got off, the most massive cruise ship ever put out to sea. It was the maiden voyage, and it was reserved for all gay men. So Hal Sparks, because of his role in Queer as Folk, you know, a lot of people assumed, I guess, that Hal is gay. So when he got off the boat and walked into town, we went one way, he went the other, thank God. He said that they couldn't move. Everybody's coming up. We want your autograph. Give us your autograph. We want your autograph. What?
They were trying to get him on the ship.
Yeah, they wanted to. I wonder for what. We'll be right back. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Raging Lefty. You gotta love that. And his message to set the record straight about Patrick of Ireland, who was not a Roman Catholic nor believed in papal authority. Patrick of Ireland was a missionary of the Celtic Orthodox Christian Church. The Vatican distorted Patrick's history and forced Roman Catholicism on Ireland centuries after his death. Learn more from The Legacy of the True Historical Patrick by Richard Bennett. Just type in The Legacy of the True Historical Patrick and you'll get it all. It was written by a former Irish Catholic priest. No, I'm not going to say a word about that because he might have been one that didn't bugger little boys. You never know, you know? Coming up after the break, we're going to talk for a bit with Susan Saladoff. She has recently made the Sundance Accepted Award, the Sundance Accepted Award-winning film Hot Coffee on how corporations use tort reform, with quotes around it, to prevent people from suing, denying them their Seventh Amendment rights. What else we got here in the... I don't know when I'll get to this, but New York Times last week published an ad paid for by the Freedom From Religion Foundation that was written in part by Annie Laurie Gaylor, who is the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And it was telling Catholics that it might be time to consider leaving the Roman Catholic Church. And it went on to give very clear reasons why. One of the questions it asked, or a couple, it says, why are you propping up the pillars of a tyrannical and autocratic, woman-hating, sex-perverting, antediluvian old boys' club? Why are you aiding and abetting a church that has repeatedly and publicly announced a crusade to ban contraception, abortion, and sterilization, and to deny the rights of all women everywhere, Catholic or not, to decide whether and when to become a mother? When it comes to reproductive freedom, the Roman Catholic Church is public enemy number one. Think of the acute misery, poverty, needless suffering, unwanted pregnancies, social evils, and deaths that could be laid at the door of the Church's antiquated doctrine that birth control is a sin and must be outlawed. And it goes on like this. And everything that Freedom From Religion Foundation put in their ad that was taken from this, I guess you would call it editorial piece from Annie Laurie Gaylor, everything taken and put into the ad was never an attack on Jesus. It was never an attack on Christianity. I do that. It was an attack on the Roman Catholic Church, for obvious reasons. Well, guess what? This crazed, what's her name, Geller? Pam Geller? This crazy woman who is now accusing the... well, Pam Geller, first of all, is a blogger and executive director of the Stop Islamization of America. Ooh, yeah, that really needs stopping, doesn't it, Pam? She's a hustler and trying to make a buck, and she is doing it on the backs of Islam. Anyway, the New York Times refused to run an ad from her. Yeah, she wanted to run an ad that she claims was similar to appeal to Muslims to leave their church. And Geller told Fox News, this shows the hypocrisy of the New York Times, blah, 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 blah. But in her ad, let me ask you if this sound, anything that I'm going to read to you sounds like something that was in the, it may be time to reconsider your membership in the Catholic Church. Here's what Pam Geller wants to put up. And this is just one or two sentences. Why put up with an institution that dehumanizes women and non-Muslims? Do you keep identifying, or why do you keep identifying with the ideology that threatens liberty for women and menaces freedom by slaughtering, oppressing, and subjugating non-Muslims? Join those of us who put humanity above the vengeful, hateful, and violent teachings of Islam's prophet, with quotes around the word prophet. Now, supposing Freedom From Religion Foundation, in their ad, would have said, why do you continue to follow the vengeful, hateful, and violent teachings of Christianity's, quote, prophet? What, in the first place, the Times would not have run that. And in the second place, they're not going to run this piece of garbage, at least not yet, from this crazed Pam Geller. The executive director of the Stop Islamization of America organization. Woo-woo! Well, they're doing a great job because so far America has not been Islamized or Islam... Blah, 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 blah. So you're doing a great job, Pam. Another psycho, another right-wing psycho. Of course, Pam Geller is known for, I believe she identifies herself as a Zionist. I don't know. I have no idea, and I really don't care. But you're going to hear about this now. See, it'll get out of the crawl space that is the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization through the network of these little cockroaches on the Internet. And word will get out about the New York Times. Ooh, they'll bust Catholicism, but they won't allow busting Islam, which is not the case at all. But trust me, as someone who has been targeted by these right-wing sons of bitches, I can tell you now, it doesn't make any difference what you really say. The only thing that matters is how they spin what you said. Trust me on that one. We'll be right back. Here at the top of next hour. So we're going to go ahead and open the lines if you'd like to call in right now. 877-996-2556 is the number. Let's hear what you got to say. At the bottom of this hour, in about half an hour, we will be giving away a one-year podcast subscription courtesy of all the people who have been sending donations for podcast subscriptions to give away on this Friday night thingy we do. So you get a free one-year subscription, commercial-free. Hell, the show may be commercial-free pretty soon, but commercial-free podcast downloads in your email box most of the time. We got a bunch of emails, I think earlier this week, that there was a screw-up with some that were not showing up, and I think our webmaster, bless his heart, George, got it all straightened out. I hope so anyway. We can always refund you 25 cents per show that you miss. That's what it works out to, right? So anyway, podcast trivia at the bottom of the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Arthur F. I don't know if I should give his last... Should I give his last name? He writes, would you put your head in a microwave oven? Then why would you put it next to a cell phone? Contact the cellular phone task force. Contact the cellular phone task force for information about electromagnetic radiation as it relates to health, environment, disabilities, and civil rights. Their website is cellphonetaskforce.org. And since I garbled that so badly, let me do it again. It's from Arthur Furstenberg is our sponsor this hour. Arthur writes, Would you put your head in a microwave oven? When I first saw that, I thought he was inviting me to do something. Why, then, would you put it next to a cell phone? Contact the Cellular Phone Task Force for information about electromagnetic radiation as it relates to health, environment, disabilities, and civil rights. The website is cellphonetaskforce.org. Thank you, Arthur, for the sponsorship and the information at the site about cell phone radiation. It's real. It's just like the tinnitus thing. It's real. Or are they talking about the cure? I don't know. I don't know. Okay, what else? Nobody wants to call in. Okay. Shall I give the number again? 877-996-2556. All 37 of our listeners apparently are out tonight. Well, it is St. Patrick's Day tomorrow, right? Maybe that's it. From a former altar boy who signs off John the Chaste. Mike, it is true, isn't it, that pre-Christian religions often featured temples. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me start again. Mike, is it true? It is true, isn't it, that pre-Christian religions often featured temple whores or temple prostitutes? Now, wouldn't that be a good reason to go to temple as often as possible? Anyway, fast forward into the transition into Christianity, a religion that mimicked its predecessors in many ways, but usually in quite perverted ways. Do you see where I'm going with this? So as Christianity slowly baptized the pagan citizenry, it probably brought on board some of the folks that were priests who couldn't wait to become Christian priests. Only one thing. Temple prostitutes were out, but the concept still burned bright in the born-again priests and the general horny male population. Bingo! Enter the altar boy! From temple prostitute to altar boy. The exploitation and domination theme is truly reborn into the master of perversion, Christianity. Of course, its inclusion is fully appreciated by the all-male priesthood. Something to think about, ain't it? Former altar boy, John the Chaste. Wow, John. Now, I wouldn't have read that except for the fact that you say you're a former altar boy. So. Go ahead, Malloy. Dig your hole deeper. Hey. We have to do what we have to do, right? Oh, yeah. Do. And then there's this. A Midwest militia group. That would be the Huttery. Remember they got busted, when was it? A year or so ago? Maybe it wasn't that long ago. The Huttery. Isn't that a cool name? Sounds like some kind of a disease you get around your mouth. What's the matter with you? I got the Huttery, man. Really? All those open sores? Yeah, it's the Huttery. Anyway, this militia group, whose members are accused of plotting to murder police, had a kill list, now it turns out, that included current and former U.S. presidents, top government officials, and members of Congress. An FBI agent testified Tuesday in a federal trial. That's Tuesday, 2 days ago. The list from members of the group called the Huttery. And you ought to see a doctor about that. I am just leaking all over. It was entitled Established Elite Still in Control. And the hit list included military officers, reporters, corporate executives, and so on. Boy, this was an ambitious bunch of mouth breathers. I can't do it tonight. I wouldn't be on the air tonight except, you know, I'm filling in for Brad Friedman. Anyway, the FBI agent, Steve Hogg, who had gained access to the group by posing as a truck driver, said the list was circulated during the wedding of Huttery leader David Brian Stone Sr. to Tina Stone. The FBI agent served as the best man at the wedding. Now, by God, that's infiltrating. That's a good job. I'll tell you what, Agent Haug, that was wonderful. You wound up as the best man at this freak's wedding. Ow! Seven members of the Huttery, including Stone and his wife, faced federal charges of sedition, the attempted use of weapons of mass destruction, and firearms offenses. Now, defense attorneys have argued that the Huttery Man, put a Band-Aid on that. That the Huttery was merely engaging in angry expressions of free speech and did not intend to commit acts of terrorism. No, 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 no. That's what I do on this program. What these people were doing, they had a hit list. I mean, you're going to kill people. It would have been awfully busy, though. No attacks were carried out. Prosecutors played a recording of jurors for a conversation at Stone's wedding in which Joshua John Clow, a Huttery member who pleaded guilty in December to weapons charges, told one of the undercover agents that it was, quote, a whole complete kill list. Whole complete? As opposed to what? A partial complete? Jesus. At the wedding, the guy who's pled guilty told Huttery members they needed to practice loading and unloading a van. You gotta practice doing that? Oh, yeah. And establish a base camp where they could patrol the perimeter. How about the nearest Walmart parking lot? That'd be a good base camp. You can, you know. Oh. What always gets me, never fails to get me, these white terrorist organizations are usually the dumbest crackers you could possibly imagine. Man, we got to practice something. What's that? What's that? Make an explosive? No, we got to practice loading and unloading a van. Oh, damn. Really? I joined this group to do that?
It's an angry sea, but there is no doubt that the lighthouse will keep shining out to warn the lonely sailor. Lightning strikes and the wind cuts cold through the sailor's heart, to the sailor's soul, to the sailor's soul. And there's nothing left for me to hold except this roll.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. I tell you what, we're going to do a podcast trivia after the second break, not after the next one. Around 10 before the hour when we come back. We'll do it then. Ken is driving in South Dakota. Hello, Ken.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
I'm all right. Still dealing with some allergy problems, but you know.
Well, see if you can get through the whole complete show.
I'm gonna try.
I just wanted to call and say hi. I was riding along and nobody was calling in. My God, I've been listening to you forever. I feel like you, Kathy, and Molly are family.
You're kidding.
And I thought, you know, it's time I called in and said hi. You're my favorite host, and you express how I feel with just the right amount of passion. You know, Mike, we're about the same age, you and I. We go back to the days, and this is how I feel. It's like, you know, we came out of the 60s and 70s. We did a lot: civil rights, the draft, the vote, getting ready to get it, ending the war. And don't you feel like these last 10 years, your life's work's been completely undone?
Yeah. Oh, man. Especially the last 10.
You know, it's like, what happened? You feel almost useless. It's like, you know, we got to go through this again. And, you know, to recapture everything. It's all been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, altar boy from New Orleans back in the 60s, And, of course, you know, I left the church probably about the time I was 15 and had enough of it. But I could still go back inside from time to time and visit the priest in there. And
sure.
The old lady, my most recent visit back there, I walked in and, in the back of the church was nothing about it. All these instructions about how to conduct yourself when you're picketing an abortion clinic.
Hmm.
I'm like, this is unrecognizable. I don't recognize the old church. I don't recognize my country.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about, Ken.
And I appreciate everything you do, and, you know, I'm keeping it lit, and I'll be there as long as you need.
All right, man. Thank you so much. Ken, good to hear from you. Thank you. It's nice to get just a good old-fashioned, excuse me, positive phone call once in a while. Thanks, Ken. Take care, okay?
Yeah, you too. We'll talk again.
All right. Drive safe. What I mean is one that's just kind of supportive, you know. The only phone calls we get on this program are supportive or positive or something. I don't know. Thanks, Ken. You know what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm saying, but you know what I'm saying. All right, if you call in now, we're going to put you on for trivia. So just want to let you know. Joe is in Los Angeles listening on Sirius. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Mike, how are you today?
All right, how are you?
Glad to hear from you, fella, because the day without Mike just makes me feel sad. And see, I got you to laugh, Mike.
Yeah, you did.
There's another positive call.
There you go.
But, Mike, I told Kathy I did something, and Mike, I got to confess to you what I did.
Uh-oh.
See, Mike, I went and voted, and I voted for Sarah Palin.
No.
And I got to hold the tears back. I got to confess. You see, I voted for her for Worst Actress in the Razzie Awards because she's up against two cross-dressers. And I can just imagine the title when the awards are presented on April Fool's Night that she might lose to a pair of cross-dressers. I just wanted to beg your forgiveness on that, Mike, but I just couldn't resist it. I mean, if anybody's been Worst Actress, it's definitely Sarah Palin.
It would be Sarah Palin. I'll tell you what, Joe, you're going to have to do some repentance, whatever. I want you to do a bunch of Hail Marys, Our Fathers. You're not Catholic, are you?
Oh, no, Mike. I was never Catholic. I belong to Brand X, but I gave up on Brand X.
Okay. Well, then, whatever Brand X used as a way of being contrite for your action, you're going to have to do some of those. And Joe, listen, whether you do or not, I grant you total absolution. If you voted for her as worst actress on anything, and it really doesn't matter what that was, could have been a dog food commercial, but I absolve you for any sins, real and imagined. And Joe, thank you so much. Here comes a break. Thanks, Joe. Take care. Oh. Excuse me again. All right, we have a break here. When we come back, we're going to do some podcast trivia. If you want to hurry up, we got one open line. Oh, the 50 break. That's right. My bad. Never mind. Never mind. Never mind. Never mind. Not this break. Never mind. Never mind. But we do have an open line. 877-996-2556. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy, I think. Before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Arthur Furstenberg. Here's his message. Would you put your head in a microwave oven? Why would you put it next to a cell phone? Contact the Cellular Phone Task Force for information about electromagnetic radiation as it relates to health, environment, disabilities, and civil rights. Website, cellphonetaskforce.org. Thank you, Arthur. I appreciate the sponsorship very much. Phone calls. Mike is in Saginaw, Michigan, listening on Sirius. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm okay. How about you?
I'm just sitting here cooking my brain, waiting for you to answer my call.
Okay.
Well, I just calling about, well, Michigan has been having some really strange weather lately. This winter has probably been the oddest one I can remember in my whole lifetime.
Uh-huh.
I've been wearing shorts for the last 3 days. We just had some tornadoes roll through in the last week. Happened twice. And I'm just wondering why this isn't being talked about more, maybe by the Democrats, because the Republicans really, I mean, are so anti-environment. I guess I don't really know what your stance is on climate change, but I've been having this discussion with a lot of people lately, and I think more people are becoming aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why they don't come out a little stronger as pro-environment, because I think that it's connected with so many of the problems that we're having right now.
Well, I agree with you, Mike. I'm very much in favor of making people aware that humans are altering the environment, the weather environment, the climate, the temperatures. It's just horrible. We've talked about it a lot on the program. Must have been nights when, you know, you probably missed it. But my position is pretty much in keeping with a lot of global climatologists, global warming climatologists, who say even if we stopped polluting the atmosphere now, I mean, right now, at you know, 36 minutes past the hour on this Friday night, if we stop now, the damage that we've done would continue to accumulate for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years until finally, maybe, perhaps, there would be a leveling off. But when they talk about stopping now, they mean not just us, not just the United States, not just the U.S. and Canada, not just, but the entire planet. And that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So I think most people have taken the attitude, and by most, I mean numerically, the most people on the planet have taken the attitude of, A, I don't want to hear about it, and B, it's a temporary thing, and C, this is just natural cycles, and D, I just don't want to hear about it. So, and of course, that attitude is promoted by the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization, a.k.a. Fox News, all the time. So I don't know. We're in a world of hurt here, where it concerns this climate change, global heating, would be a more appropriate way to put it. And part of that is tornadoes, hurricanes, floods, just everything. And I don't know, Mike. I'm like you. I talk to people in the real world, not here on talk radio, but in the real world, I talk to people about this all the time, especially people that have young kids, like I do. I mean, what the hell are we supposed to tell our kids?
I hear you. I have a daughter, too, a 3-year-old daughter, so scary.
It is. I wish the human race, and, you know, it's pretty difficult to blame anybody for this, because everybody is responsible. Everybody. We didn't listen. We refused to listen. Recycling our tin cans is not going to make a damn bit of difference. I mean, not that that's not a good thing to do, but it's not going to make a damn bit of difference. You know, using light bulbs that don't that are not incandescent is not going to do a damn thing. It's a good thing to do, but it's not going to do anything where it concerns global climate change. Setting your the temperature on your house water heater down 10 degrees is a good thing, but it's not going to do a damn thing where it concerns global warming. What is going to do something about global warming is for everybody to stop pouring millions of tons of carbon into the atmosphere every year. And in order to do that, there has to be an instantaneous awareness on the part of every human being on Earth that we are all soon going to die. If not us, our children, if not our children, our grandchildren, when the planet becomes too messed up to sustain life. But nobody, you know, nobody thinks about that. Most people don't even accept their own mortality, much less the mortality of the planet. So it's a tough one, Joe, or Mike. I don't know what to say, but I do have to move on. Mike, thanks for checking in. I appreciate your call, sir. Take care. Yeah, I talk about that periodically, but that's one of those topics. I'll be honest with you. It's difficult for me to talk about global climate change. What can you say? I mean, it's like trying to warn people if gravity were a bad thing, you know, trying to warn people, well, you got to do something about gravity. Oh, yeah? Really? Boy, are you loopy. So global climate change, it's just any time I have talked about it, and I do occasionally on this program, it, you know, usually leaves me very, very upset. I don't mean angry or depressed or anxious. I mean just cataclysmically upset, because I, to the extent that I pay attention to the popular press and the scientific press that is written for people like me, I understand the issue. And I understand how critical the issue is. And I understand, I mean, we've been talking about this for 35 years. I mean, it's just, you know. So, who was the poet? Was it Fire and Ice? Who wrote that? Was that Carl Sandburg? Some say the world will end in fire, some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those who favor fire. But if it had to perish twice, I think that ice is something and would suffice. Who wrote that? Is that Carl Sandburg? I don't know who wrote it. Fire and Ice. Peter is in the Bronx listening on XM. Hello, Peter.
Hi, how you doing, Michael?
I'm all right. How are you?
All right. Hey, thanks for everything you're doing. It's really appreciated of you.
Well, thank you for tuning in.
Okay. Mike, I got, I'm in a quandary here. You know, we've had the Occupy movement. You know, people are more aware because of the internet and stuff, and it's so just, but nothing's happening. Like, what do we do now? You know what I mean? What's next? It's frustrating.
Well, it is. What are you referring to something specifically about what do we do now?
Just like, yeah, it seems like anything that's happening, like people who are protesting, asking for change.
It's not
covered, you know.
Yeah,
it's like it's not even happening.
I see what you mean. Well, you know, a lot of this. I mean, a movement like Occupy. Or a movement to try to change, and Occupy is a global movement now. It's not in every country, but it certainly is in a lot of countries. I hate to use this word because it sounds like you know, something you make fun of, but it's got to be organic, and I think it is organic. I think there's an awareness. I mean, like the other day in the New York Times, when you have a guy resign from Goldman Sachs with a letter to the op-ed page of the New York Times saying that the whole system has become corrupted and nasty and ugly, where clients are referred to as Muppets and so on and so forth. That indicates, I mean, that's what Occupy was all about. I mean, this guy was a vice president for Goldman in the London office, and look what he's done. It's all over now. If you read the Times the past couple of days.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so the business section now, the news section, letters to the editor.
But do you think does that go from there, or does it just go through the news cycle and then that's it? You know what I mean? Like, is there going to be follow-up, I guess?
Well, I think, you know, follow-up comes after awareness. There has to be those initial moves. How did we get the U.S. Government to stop the slaughter of our people and their people in Vietnam? It came through was silent for the most part protest. Thousands upon hundreds of thousands and eventually millions of people marching. There had to be an awareness of what was going on, and as difficult as it was for Americans to accept that we were butchering people that for no reason other than the greed of capitalism, and this horrible fight with the, by proxy with the Soviet Union. And, you know, once the awareness came and the movement started, the awareness came and then came change. So I don't know if there's still time for all that to happen. I really don't. But, I've got to think, Peter, that at least it has a chance. I got to leave there, man. We have a break here. Thanks for checking in, Peter. I hope you call again. Take care.
We'll die with both of my hands untied. I've been dreaming of a time when the English are sick to death.
Again for podcast trivia, Carolyn Malloy program, where you can win a 1 year commercial free subscription to Malloy program podcast downloads with an average retail value of 25 cents per program. That's because the whole year only costs $59.60, but that's immaterial. All right, cut the music, maestro, and let's go to Daniel is in Seattle. Let's see on KPGK. All right, Dan, you ready to do this?
Yeah, but I'm not really listening to KTPK because you don't come until 9 o'clock here.
Yeah, I know. So you're listening on.
I wish they didn't delay it. I could stand to lose Randy Rhodes.
Are you listening online?
I'm listening on my cell phone, actually.
On your cell. Okay.
I've got all these ways of listening to you.
I know. It's just amazing. Isn't technology horrifying? All right, Daniel, you ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
Okay, start the music, maestro. All right, Daniel, this week saw a phenomenon predicted but never fulfilled for a very long time, so long, in fact, it seemed like millennia. The prediction was finally realized, and the multitudes cheered and glorified its advent. What was that phenomenon? Was it A, the return of the Christian Messiah? B, the first appearance of the Jewish Messiah? C, proof that it would be impossible for the Easter Bunny to deliver billions of colored eggs? Or D, that Rush Limbaugh lost and continues to lose scores of advertisers because of his hate-filled broadcasts?
I gotta go with D.
You think it's D? All right. Okay.
And Rush Limbaugh should not be confused with the Messiah.
No, that's true. It shouldn't even be in the same paragraph. It was just part of the trivia question, though. All right, Daniel, good on you, pals. Hold on. Kathy will get the information necessary to complete our end of the bargain. Congratulations on winning a 1 year subscription. And this hour has been sponsored by Arthur Furstenberg, who writes, would you put your head in a microwave oven? Then why would you put it next to a cell phone? Contact the Cellular Phone Task Force for information about electromagnetic radiation as it relates to health, environment, disabilities, and civil rights. Their website, cellphonetaskforce.org. Thank you, Arthur. Have you seen those x-rays of people who have brain tumors that are in the shape of a cell phone transmitter right up there where they hold it by their ear? Every time I see somebody with one of those Bluetooth clips around their ear, I get the same feeling that I get when I see a teenager smoking a cigarette if you know what I mean. Mike is in Buffalo, New York, listening on XM. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
Yeah, Mike, I listen to every night. What I do is I've got a Sirius radio where I can reverse it. So what I do is when you start ranting and raving, which I think is great, I play it over the CB, and these truck drivers are so crazy.
Well, are you a truck driver?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, we have a lot of truckers that listen to the show. I love it. But I would imagine, like any profession, we also have a lot of people who think I'm a spawn of Satan or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like I was telling Kathy, Fox was bad-mouthing the Chevy Volt. I would like to see maybe General Motors come out with something like a lease deal to try to get these cars on the market. Cause I know they stopped production, but I like to see them come out with a low-price lease and try to start flooding the market with these cars. It would be great. And also, I'd like to see if probably will never happen, the government have its own refinery where the gas is refined and it stays in this country and doesn't go on the global market until we can get enough electric cars out there.
Mm-hmm.
We know for sure we're going to have to use gasoline. There's no getting around it.
Well, that's one of the propositions in Malloy-style socialism, social democracy, where the government, that would be people like you and me and the other 330 million of us, we are in control with our tax dollars of the very thing you're talking about, refineries. In other words, energy production. That, yeah, any energy produced in this country, whether no matter from what source, it's ours, and it should stay here, I guess, until such time as we can give that energy to other people, but and then get away from fossil fuels entirely.
Exactly.
You know, how many times have you heard, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, that the amount of sunlight striking this planet every 24 hours is enough to fuel every single energy need that this planet needs, you know, like what, 10 million times over? Pick a number. I mean, it's just a ridiculous number. And it's free. It's solar energy. And it's this powerful, powerful force that just envelops this planet every single day. And yet it just, you know, except for a few attempts to harness that power, it's just not part of the game plan. What a terrible, terrible attitude.
Yeah, Mike, you're right. And I don't know, it just drives me crazy. The economy's starting to pick up and get better. And then the oil companies do this to us by raising the prices and speculators and everything else. It's almost like this economy, it's like it's set. I don't know. I almost believe the way the world is set up, well, it's set up never for us to actually always be prosperous. There's always going to be a glitch in there to make it that we start to get a little bit better, but then something takes us down. We just never seem to get ahead.
I hear you.
Yeah.
All right. I tend to agree with that. I just hope that somehow we'll someday, Mike, figure out a way to prevent that, or to alter it, or to change it, to get away from the system that's eating us all alive. Mike, thanks, man. Drive safely. Drive safely. We'll talk again. Take care. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It's 6:30 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. Susan Saladoff made the Sundance award-winning film Hot Coffee on how corporations use so-called tort reform and various clauses, arbitration clauses, various ways to avoid responsibility and fund right-wing state and local judges with lots and lots of money to limit access to the courts for civil cases. And all of that is part of what has gone on from Wall Street to Big Pharma. It's a corporate coup to take away rights of regular people to make corporations pay for their misdeeds. The usual suspects behind so-called tort reform, Chamber of Commerce, Coke-run ALEC, Rove, and so on and so forth, it's the usual suspects. But tort reform, when you see that term, tort reform, whether it comes from Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich or Romney, what they're talking about is denying people the right to sue corporations, a right that is already in jeopardy of disappearing anyway. Susan Saladoff joins us now from New Orleans. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Mike. Hi. Thanks so much for having me on.
Sure. I have not seen the film yet, and I do want to see it. Tell us a bit about the substance of it.
Well, the title, of course, comes from the infamous McDonald's coffee case, the case that everybody thinks they know,
right,
but really almost nobody knows the true facts.
That was the older lady who had it spill on her lap, and the right wing will tell you she got millions, when in fact the final judgment was reduced to what?
Well, the judgment was reduced to $480,000, but then both sides appealed, and they wound up settling the case for an undisclosed amount of money. She was subject to a gag order, so she wasn't able to disclose to the public, you know, what really happened, whereas, of course, McDonald's and the other tort reform advocates used that case as the poster child for what's wrong with our civil justice system.
It was my understanding she was severely burned.
Oh, she had third-degree burns, which are the worst kinds of burns that you can get, and she needed skin grafting, skin literally taken from her thighs and sewn into her private parts, and she was in the hospital for 8 days and incapacitated for almost 2 years. And when people see the film, Hot Coffee, they come in thinking, oh, yes, this is such a ridiculous lawsuit, and afterwards, you know, I've been at, you know, literally tens of dozens of film festivals, and afterwards I always ask people, you know, how many people now think that this was a frivolous case, and nobody raises their hand.
You know, I had to look up today a Seventh Amendment, and I did, and here it is. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Now, granted, this is written in the 18th century. any controversy exceeding $20. What was the intent of that amendment? And it was part of the Bill of Rights. It was one of the first 10. What was the intent of that?
Well, it was so that we have a jury of our peers that decide, you know, what our rights should be, and in these types of cases where we're asking for people who have committed, you know, made products that harm us, that pollute our streams, that, you know, commit medical negligence, that we get 12 people get to decide what the appropriate level of damages are, and not people who sit in the legislature who never get to see the victim, who never get to know the true facts of a case or what the level of wrongdoing was. You know, when we have caps on damages, for example, which is what our second, there are four storylines in the film, and each one represents a different way that we as Americans are giving up our rights to access the court system. And most of us don't even think about it or care about it until it affects us personally. And one of these ways is something called caps on damages, which is a one-size-fits-all number that legislators make up in their offices after being lobbied heavily by large corporations, pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies, and so on. And they say that people can never get any more money, even regardless of how badly they injured they are, no matter how long they have to live with these and suffer these injuries. And there's a one-size-fits-all number, and we document in the film what that really means for people.
Mm-hmm. Now, this has appeared already maybe twice on HBO, is that right?
Oh, it was on all summer as part of the summer documentary series, and then they re-aired it in January, and it's actually back on now, and will be on through April, and it's also on demand now. And if you have HBO, you can download their app, which is called HBO Go, and then you can stream it on that. It's also available on Netflix. You'd have to get the DVD. It's not streaming because HBO is a direct competitor with Netflix in terms of streaming, but you can get it there. And then our website is hotcoffeethemovie.com, and there's a trailer, and then you can also get the DVD off of there.
Do you have any idea how effective, outside the critics community, how effective this film has been where it concerns not just a general viewing, but also the possibility of focusing now on this lie that's put out there that what the a lot of legislators, most of whom happen to be Republican, call tort reform?
Well, all I can tell you is that millions of people have seen the film now from HBO, and also it's been at dozens of film festivals. It's been on TV around the world. And the number one response that I get on our Facebook page and also just from people emailing us is, this is eye-opening. You know, I thought I was an intelligent person. You know, I think of myself as an intelligent person. I read the newspapers. I vote. And I did not get it. I didn't understand what was happening, how much propaganda was being fed to the American public. And these are flat-out lies that are being told. And they're being told over and over again because these large corporate interests, they pool their money together through, like, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which, of course, you know, hopefully your viewers know what the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is. But most people, you know, think that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is a governmental agency. And they have no idea that this is the largest lobbying group for corporations in the country, if not the world. And they, you know, raise money and put it together to put these big public relations campaigns together all over the country. Also in judge races, you know, we now elect our judges in most of our states. And when you elect judges, they have to run for office. And when they run for office, they can essentially be bought.
Yeah, the role of the chamber is a frequent topic on this program. And I think most of the people who tune in are well aware that that it is nothing more and nothing less than a lobbying group. As a matter of fact, when was it? January, a year ago, I almost got arrested in front of the Chamber of Commerce. No, back in October, another demonstration with the Occupy folks up in D.C. So, yeah, most people listening to this program know what they're about, the Chamber of Commerce, that it is a front organization. I know you know about Rick Santorum's hypocrisy. He pushes malpractice, trying to limit malpractice awards. And then when a case came up with his wife, he pushed to have, well, I'll tell you what, let me take a break here, Susan. When we come back, I'd like you to explain that one to folks, okay?
Sure.
All right, hold on just a second. We're talking with Susan Saladoff. She is the a producer of the award-winning, Sundance award-winning film, Hot Coffee. And I want you to stick around. We're going to pick up the conversation when we come back. By the way, this hour is being sponsored by Terrence Bunce. His message, I'll pay to keep your show on forever if necessary so you don't have to rattle that tin cup. I'm breaking out my wallet and make a donation to stop the powers that are threatening to shut you down. I'll keep it lit in Northern Virginia. Red or blue state? Where I live, it's a purple mess. I hear you. Thank you, Terrence. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back after this break.
just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We are talking with Susan Saladoff. She is the producer of the Sundance Award-winning film Hot Coffee. Rick Santorum, who, like a lot of conservative politicians, always push the issue of tort reform. And, of course, we know that that's not what they're talking about, not tort reform in the sense it would satisfy or expand on people's legal rights vis-a-vis the Seventh Amendment. But what is the story with Rick Santorum now? It was in the Washington Post.
So he's been a big advocate for, you know, what other people call tort
right.
reform. I call it tort deform because it really isn't any good for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But what, you know, he's always been an advocate for putting a limitation on how much money people should be able to get in medical malpractice cases and other types of personal injury cases. And there are a lot of politicians who feel that way until, of course, something happens to them or a loved one or someone very close to them, like it did in his case.
Right.
His wife claimed that she was the subject of medical malpractice by a chiropractor and sued the chiropractor for $500,000, even though Rick Santorum was advocating for legislation to put a $250,000 cap on pain and suffering in these types of cases. And so, you know, when it affects his wife, and he testified on her behalf, and when he was challenged, you know, well, you know, aren't you a hypocrite, essentially? He said, oh, well, you know, I can't, you know, I can't help what my wife does, you know. as if somehow, you know.
As if that were even true.
Right. I mean, he wound up, you know, he did testify on her behalf. I actually haven't gotten a copy of the complaint. I'm curious to see if there was a loss of consortium claim, which would be, of course,
right.
A claim on his behalf.
Right.
But, you know, this is so common. You know, until something happens to people individually or a loved one or until they have some personal experience, most people don't get it. You know, they don't understand that they're giving up their own constitutional rights, their own, you know, our tort system, our court system. It's a fundamental part of our democracy. I mean, we only have three branches of government, and our courts are one of them. And
mm-hmm.
where else can we hold wrongdoers accountable? Where else can we hold, you know, corporations accountable other than the courts? And they figured it out. And they figured out a way to convince the public to basically voluntarily give up their own rights. And
well, the attitude now, as pointed out finally by the Occupy movement several months ago, is this horrendous divide. 1%, 99%, whatever the divide is, it is an awful construct in a country that is supposed to be a democratic republic, which we are, of course, no longer are. And the fact that corporations have so taken over, as you point out, they've taken over just about everything. It's become a corporatist society. So any of this tort reform, I wonder how many of these people have ever walked through a burn unit where a person has been grievously injured, wounded, hurt because of a deformed product, something that blew up in their face or burned their hands, or in the case of the woman in the McDonald's, had to have skin grafts. And I wonder if that would make a difference if they could see the actual suffering. The idea that the framers, in all their shortcomings, were able to see in the Bill of Rights, in those first 10 amendments, that something like the Seventh Amendment was absolutely necessary in order
yeah.
to protect the rights of people. And how better than by a jury of your peers? Because
you know, who actually see, and the thing is that this type of law, these cases, you're supposed to look at them individually, meaning each person. The reason why we don't have, you know, sort of a workers' comp system in these types of cases where there's sort of, you know, one-size-fits-all numbers
mm-hmm.
is because the whole point is 12 people are supposed to look at this individual person and what happened to this person and what was the negligence and how severe was it and how old is this person and how long is this person going to live with this injury, so that it's an individual decision. And there are so many checks and balances. I mean, one of the arguments that, you know, the corporate interests say is that, you know, these juries are out of control and, you know, but the thing is that even if 12 people were to get it wrong, you know, then a judge can reduce the verdict, like they did in the McDonald's case, which most people don't know. And then there's an appeal after appeal. So there are so many checks and balances in the system as it exists that we don't need to have this artificial way of deciding how much money people are entitled to. And the reason that that's happened is because of, you know, the Citizens United case, and even before that, you know, these corporations have spent millions of dollars influencing legislators.
Well, I hope everybody has a chance to see the film. It is called Hot Coffee is the title. It plays on HBO all this month or all of April?
I think it's, someone told me it's on now, but I know that it's also on April. And if you are a Facebook person, we have a Facebook fan page. It's facebook.com/hotcoffeethemovie, and we put on there wherever it's airing and whenever it's airing, also on our website, which is hotcoffeethemovie.com.
All right, Susan, thank you so much. Congratulations on the award, but more so, thank you for bringing this kind of thing to the public's attention. Susan Saladoff, the producer of Hot Coffee. Thanks, Susan. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Michael Malloy. All you have to do.
Come listen now, me true men, to my simple rhyme, for it tells of a young man put up in his prime, a soldier and a statesman who laid down the law and to die by the roadside in Lone Vale of Law.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
Here indeed, 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Terrence Bunce, whose message, I'll pay to keep you showing forever if necessary, so you don't have to rattle that tin can. Hey, that's part of the business, Terrence. This business, anyway. I'm bringing out my wallet, and we'll make a donation to stop the powers that are threatening to shut you down. I'll keep it lit in Northern Virginia. Red or blue state, where I live, it's a purple mess. Thank you, Terrence. That's pretty kind. Mark Taylor Canfield is a writer for Huffington Post. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I have a story for you that doesn't seem to be getting much coverage. I shouldn't be surprised. It's not the first story about the Occupy Wall Street movement that hasn't gotten corporate media coverage, but there are about 600 people who have gathered in St. Louis for the Midwest Occupy Movement Conference. And that's the second national major convention of occupiers in the United States. And on the first day, which was yesterday, St. Louis police attacked about 150 demonstrators that were actually leaving the park after they'd been told that they wouldn't be allowed to stay there. And even though the organizers had pretty much gathered up people and, you know, they had already announced that they were leaving, for some reason the St. Louis police decided to come in with tasers and started beating people with batons and using pepper spray, and they ended up arresting 14 people. And what's really shameful and what's interesting to me is just the fact that during similar incidents in Oakland or New York City or Seattle, the authorities usually try to claim that the protesters had thrown bottles or done something in order to justify the physical violence. But in this case, they aren't even claiming that the protesters did anything except for, believe it or not, violate a city park ordinance. So I just don't get it. And it was just like last week I was on a BBC program where there was this international dialogue about the protest against Putin in Russia. And one of the Russian bloggers actually said, you know, watching the news, it seems to me that police have cracked down more on demonstrators and the Occupy Wall Street movement in the United States than the Russian police have on Putin demonstrators. Although I have to say that a lot of the photos coming out of Moscow were very similar, you know, to what we've seen here in the United States. But I'm pretty, you know, I have put an article up at the Huffington Post on this, but I'm really, you know, discouraged and disheartened by the fact that my fellow journalists around the country don't seem to want to report on these kind of things. And it sort of comes down to this point that what does this look like to the rest of the world when you have a country that, you know, is supposedly a proponent of democracy and freedom of speech around the world, and yet in our own country, police in, you know, cities around the country are allowed to beat up protesters who are peaceful. I mean, they're not threatening violence. They're not violating any criminal or, you know, they're not committing any felonious acts. They're not violating or vandalizing property. They are literally, you know, trying to speak out and exercise their First Amendment rights, their freedom of speech. So regardless of what, you know, how people might spin it in the corporate media, really it comes down to a prime example of political repression. I mean, if it had been a group of, you know, Boy Scouts or, you know, who knows what church groups or something, you know they wouldn't have done that. There's some kind of a political intent behind a lot of these crackdowns. And it's shameful because here, you know, in Seattle, people have just been acquitted. You know, there were five people that were arrested at a demonstration at Chase Bank. They've all been acquitted after being subjected to a trial.
Well, I think, Mark, let me interject. First of all, I have to, and this doesn't happen very often because I'm a voracious reader of the popular press, whether it's online or print or whatever. I get the New York Times and then read everything else I can. And I knew nothing about this until you just mentioned it. Now, I spend a considerable amount of time at Huffington Post. I have a good friend. Matter of fact, my godson works there as a video editor. And I spend a lot of time on Huffington Post. How long has your article been up?
It was just printed today.
Oh, just today. All right, I have to say today I'm recovering from allergy nonsense, but I didn't spend a lot of any time on the web today. Just stayed away from it. But I've seen nothing on the news, nothing on the liberal MSNBC. I'm not saying they don't have anything. Nothing on. Well, I don't watch CNN or Fox anymore, but on the network news, absolutely nothing. And this program is, for several Occupy organizations, has been a focal point. We've had people deeply involved with Oakland, with Occupy Oakland, Occupy LA, Occupy Seattle, Occupy New York, or Wall Street, who have called this program. We've had live interviews while action was being taken by the police and prior to that. To answer the question, though, that I think you're proposing or that you're positing, we are, you know, we are moving towards, if not fascism, which I think we are, it's certainly the intermediate step, corporatism, and the corporate-dominated media, I guess, have decided, at least for the time being, I don't know if it's going to change, that it's an old story. I mean, this is a story that started a year ago. So why bother with Occupy? A. B, I don't think they ever took the movement that seriously. Now, granted, there are editorial boards, like New York Times, for example, that does give credit to the Occupy Wall Street movement for focusing people's attention on this horrendous divide income or wealth that has happened here, and it's happened for a number of reasons, and we all know what those reasons are, and it's not going to stop. I don't see any foreseeable future. They're already taking apart any laws that were passed in response to all this craziness, but I think that the police understand from their superiors, whoever the superiors are, that it's time to crack heads. You don't need a reason anymore. That's part of fascism. You don't need a reason. You're in the park violating an ordinance. We're going to come in with tasers and pepper spray and flash boom grenades and make you people hurt so bad that you won't do this again. That's the only thing I can come up with. And of course, that's a false premise on the part of authorities, because the Occupy movement, I think, is going to explode, figuratively speaking.
Well, if you look behind it and who those superiors are, I mean, there are two groups. You know, there's the police administration, you know,
right,
the captains and the lieutenants and the chiefs. But there's also the mayor's office. But in my experience here in Seattle is that what's behind them is actually the business community. And that's right. the problem. Because the occupiers are seen as anti-corporate, unsightly, unwashed, you know, people. And in reality, the majority of the Occupy movement in the United States is actually pretty much mainstream Democrats.
Sure.
People who are not out in the streets. But the hardcore activists who bring it to the park or bring it to the streets, you know, they are treated like scum. I mean, they're just swept off the street, they're thrown in jail, they're beat by police, and you have to ask yourself, okay, so if this is a not coming from the government, so to speak, this is not like a federal crackdown like they, you know, have done in Syria and things like that, then what is it? Well, my experience is that there's pressure from the business associations and the Chamber of Commerce in all these cities to not have these people be visible.
Like, right, and this is where the censorship comes in, because even the few, and there are a few, of liberal television commentators on a couple of the cable channels, one in particular, even they can only go so far, because MSNBC is a division of NBC. It's owned by NBC and Microsoft, and NBC, of course, is owned by General Electric. Well, it was, and now it's owned, I think the majority ownership now is this cable company that is beholden to the Fox network, or vice versa, who knows anymore. So, I can remember when the tide turned, where it concerned the war in Southeast Asia, the Vietnam War, and it was when media finally started blasting this stuff, the atrocities, the butchery, the killing on both sides, every single night on the news, until finally awareness, and this is back when we had three networks and that was it, no internet. So the awareness of what was going on became deeper and wider until finally it was an unstoppable force to stop the war. But we don't have that kind of television commentators or news reporters anymore. Every single one of them lives in absolute, abject fear of losing his or her job, even on the so-called liberal networks. And anytime somebody does speak out, you have these little cockroaches on the internet now who run these right-wing blog sites who immediately start the attack. So I don't know. I don't see any support coming from media unless it becomes violent. Then they love to support it. Then they love to put the cameras out there. But hey, Mark, I've got to leave it there because we have a break coming here. I will go to Huffington Post and look for your artery, your artery? Ah, your article. Thank you so much for calling, and I hope you call again. Take care, Mark. Mark Taylor Canfield, go to Huffington Post. It's an article on the Occupy movement, the violence being perpetrated against the Occupy movement. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. For the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Terrence Bunce. Thank you, Terrence. His message, I'll pay to keep your show on forever if necessary so you don't have to rattle that tin can. I'm breaking out my wallet and make a donation to stop the powers that are threatening to shut you down. I'll keep it lit in Northern Virginia. Red or blue state? Where I live, it's a purple mess. Well, thanks, Terrence, and thanks to Arthur, and thanks to Raging Lefty tonight for the sponsorships. We appreciate it very much. And I'll say again, I know you're getting tired of this. If you really want to sustain this program, subscribe to the podcasts. You can do that for 56.90 a year. 50, whatever. You can find out at MikeMalloy.com. That's for a year. the podcast will be downloaded to anything you want to download it to. You can, it's getting to the point you can listen through your watch, your pen, your hearing aid, your shoe, anything. But, you know, and when I talk about powerful forces, I don't mean these cockroaches that pick and choose and distort what people say. They've done it to Bill Press. They've done it to Randy Rhodes. They do it to just about anybody who's left of Hitler. They're not the powerful forces. They just get the ball rolling. And all of them are financed by scum like Beck or scum like the Koch brothers or scum like Limbaugh or scum like, you know, pick a name. That's where they get their money. That's where they get their orders. And that's they filter this stuff up to these guys so then they can go on network television or network internet or network this or network that. And, oh, my God, look at this. Well, okay. But what happens then, and they know this, the stink is caused because they cause it. They fart up the airwaves sufficiently to the point where then major advertisers, and especially on this Limbaugh dust-up, you know, this punk goes on the air for 3 days and refers to this woman as a prostitute and a slut because she advocates for birth control methods, including insurance. I'm not going to recap it. It was just horrifying. And thank God, after 25 years of this bloated bastard drug addict on the air putting out this poison, people are advertisers are starting to pull away. But there has to be equivalence, you see. There always has to be equivalence so that they're not accused. So they reach way down here into the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains and come up with the Mike Malloy Show. So all of a sudden, you know, all these right-wingers to say, well, how many stations are you on? Well, the truth is only about 30. Rush is on 700. Oh, okay. But all of a sudden, this little radio talk show where we ask for people to subscribe to podcasts to stay on the air is suddenly as powerful, you see, as Limbaugh's, which is not true. It simply is not true. But it's presented that way so that whoever does make the decisions, excuse me, about advertising on this program, they don't know who I am. They don't know. They don't listen to talk radio. They know who Limbaugh is, but they look at, who's this guy? All right, well, let's pull ads off of him, too. Now, like I said, we didn't lose any advertisers. What we lost was the ad agency that handles the distribution. So, whatever difference that makes, we certainly are not on the same level as Limbaugh. I wish that I had 145 advertisers to lose, which I don't think will ever happen. Anyway, all by way of explanation, do with it what you will. Bruce is in California listening online. Hello, Bruce.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I just wanted to mention that Greg Smith, the guy from Goldman Sachs that wrote the op-ed piece.
Yeah.
Well, Goldman Sachs came back with their own reaction, rebuttal, I guess you might say. And they referred to him as a disgruntled employee.
Sure.
And they said that an employee who never earned more than $750,000 a year.
Oh, well, that's a put down.
Yeah. And but $15,000 a week. And then they said that he was disappointed with the size of his bonus check.
Right. And that's why he did this.
Exactly.
Well, Goldman Sachs is run by predators. It's a predatory company. And to take a look at that inside stuff, that doesn't come as a shock. What comes as a shock is that somebody would actually pull the curtain back. But the fact that the only reason these big investment banks are doing business at all now is to make a profit. Not that a profit is bad, but when it's your primary directive, and you're supposed to be in the business to help your clients, you know, I mean, Jesus.
Well, I wrote to the New York Times to try to get to contact the guy because I was impressed with his integrity and and I have some business dealings that he might be helpful with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thought to myself, hey, this guy's got some class.
Yeah, he does. And I read something today, letters to the editor about this this entire event. Well, at the same time, you can read on the business section of the New York Times. Now, it's become a news story instead of just an op-ed piece, obviously. But as some writer to the Times said today or wrote today, this guy's not going to have any problem finding another job. He will, yeah, because there are companies out there who are looking for somebody with integrity.
Yeah, I know.
So, I mean, it may have taken him 12 years to figure it out, but he figured it out.
Oh, I got to mention one other thing here to you real quick, because I know you're running out of time.
Yeah, we got 10 seconds.
Okay, I'll read a quote to you. I have had no real gratification or enjoyment of any sort more than my neighbor on the next block, who is worth only $500,000. That's the last words of William Vanderbilt, died in 1885, the son of Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Right, right.
Oh, he was worth $200 million at the time he died. The last thing you could think of.
Don't you just love the 0.1%? Bruce, I got to leave it there. Y'all have a great weekend. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Take care. Keep it lit. I'll see you Monday. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.